partnership with George's Food Truck. They've got really great creative ways of presenting food. Kauai Paint and Feed, and the Soltron Construction.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters.
Chef George of the Jungle Food Truck, now in Wailua at Kamokila Hawaiian Village, serving local burgers, gyros, and falafel. Also, Summer's Organic Shave Ice with fresh fruit. Open Sunday through Friday, 10:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. 783-0230 for takeout. Chef George of the Jungle supports KKCR.
Kilauea Paint and Feed Store, specializing in professional-grade Pittsburgh paints and paint sundries, premium pet food, and organic livestock feed, propane exchange and filling, too, located just past the Shell station on Kolo Road in Kilauea, Monday through Friday from 7:30 to 5:30, and Saturday from 8 to 1, locally owned Kilauea Paint and Feed Store, 828-6655.
Lewis and Eddie Soltron Construction, 639-4836, building quality on Kauai for over 25 years. New custom homes, remodeling, and repairs. Exclusive dealer for Talia's Hurricane Roll-Down Shutters Protection for your home. Lewis and Eddie Soltron Construction, 639-4836, or soltronconstruction.com.
Mahalo for listening and supporting Kauai Community Radio. So, this is Felicia with Kauai Soapbox, and I have another really fun show. I have Dr. Stephanie Seneff back in here. Let's see if you're mic'd up, Stephanie.
Aloha.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm just going to tell you, I dragged her back in here because, like many other shows, after the show is when we have really powerful discussion. So she's going to be in here at my request with some follow-up. And Councilman Gary Hooser will be in also helping with that discussion because I was throwing some stuff out there about policy. And then I also have Marshall in the studio with me. Marshall, are you mic'd up?
Aloha.
Hey.
Hey.
What in the world's going on? Do you have any good news for us today?
Good news.
Good news. He's always like on the upbeat mode, and I like that because I try to keep the happiness to bummer ratio up. What's going on in the world that's good?
Well, if you like peaceful international relations.
I do.
Then there's good news.
Okay, what is it?
Yesterday, the embassy of Cuba in Washington, D.C. raised the Cuban flag. And the U.S. Embassy in Havana opened up, so we have full diplomatic relations with Cuba for the first time since 1961.
1961, so longer than I've been alive. Huh. That's like 53 years.
Yeah, crazy. So we have a Cuba that is basically frozen in time, right? They've been isolated for all that time from most of the world. And they're still driving 1950s cars around, right? And the hotels still look like they did, and the food and the music and everything. And now we can start to go there.
Yes, and so it'll be a really interesting time. A few people I know, Charlie Cowden and Miko Godinez, are two people I know who went there, you know, 10 years ago or so, and they couldn't believe it because it's an example of resilience and sustainability. So, Stephanie, or any of you who might know, that the reason that they have to be back into the 50s is because the United States basically has had a military embargo. So, not just us haven't been really shipping to them. Nobody gets to ship to them because we've said no more, right?
Right. Well, they did have trade with the Soviet Union. And what really spurred their drive to self-sufficiency was when the Soviet Union fell apart. in the early 90s, they suddenly didn't have that support, and they had to figure out how to feed themselves really fast.
So that's a big deal, and I wonder if what their agriculture is like. Have you ever been there?
I haven't been there, but I know it's much, much, much more organic than ours is. I mean, they don't use a lot of chemicals, and I'm a little afraid that now that there's an open market, we may, you know, Monsanto may step out on the doorstep and try to persuade them, like they've done the rest of the world, to adopt the chemical-based agriculture.
Yes, and I know that, like, in the earlier part of the 1900s, Cuba was where people went, like the Bahamas. It was a place to go and vacation, and it was kind of a pretty swank place.
Right. Now you can go there if you're a U.S. citizen for 12 reasons. You can't go just for a vacation. And for the other reasons to go, you've pretty much got to have an itinerary that shows that you're doing your stated purpose for something like full time and only spending the rest of it on the beach. But you can go for religious reasons, for journalistic reasons, educational, humanitarian. There's even one category that's just supporting the Cuban people. So you can go as an individual, part of an organization.
So you said today. Is that today moving forward or yesterday and prior?
Yesterday, the embassies opened up. And so that.
Okay, then the day before yesterday. I mean, you could go before. Now, is this what you're talking about is the reasons moving forward? It's still not just like not anybody can go just to say, hey, I want to go hang?
Right. That. There's still a general travel ban on because the trade embargo hasn't been lifted by Congress. But there are a lot of exceptions. And the big deal now about going there for U.S. citizens that's different after yesterday is that now we have an embassy. If you lose your passport, get in some kind of trouble, you have an embassy that you can go to. So that makes all the difference. And I actually looked up today. A round-trip flight to Havana from Lihue in September, just, you know, about $1,500. You can go, you check off your little box as to what type of trip it is, and doesn't seem to be a whole lot more to it than that.
Well, we just did have a caller that says, if you want to go to Cuba, just fly in through Mexico. I know it hasn't been impossible, but it also hasn't been easy.
Oh, you can go via Miami now. And a couple other places, cheapair.com.
Cheapair.com. Okay, so there's more ways to get in there. Anything else in the world that you're thinking about?
Well, we've got the nuclear disarmament deal with Iran, or I guess it's a preemptive disarmament deal.
Yeah,
yesterday approved by the United Nations. So we've got a way to prevent Iran from having nuclear weapons so that we can start to have a work on some of the other difficult issues that exist with Iran. You know, we're just counting on the United States Congress to approve the deal.
Okay. So there's the big thing.
There's the big thing.
Okay. So the UN said yes.
The UN said yes.
But the United States, what was their vote at the UN? Did they, because they're in the Security Council, did the U.S. say yes?
Well, they didn't veto it, that's for sure. I have to say, I would have to assume so.
Okay.
I don't know that specifically. But I do know that they're celebrating in Iran, and, you know, it's being portrayed by the Supreme Leader as a victory for them, but the people are stoked.
Because they don't want to get bombed like Baghdad? I shouldn't say that with a smile on my face, because what happened to Baghdad and Syria and Libya... You know, very heartfelt. They've been all those places, even Yemen, practically bombed back to the Stone Age. And, you know, each one of them had kind of bustling economies and cities and things. So when I see these pictures of Iran, it's very beautiful. I know I don't agree with all their politics. I don't even agree with all of our politics. But so I'm happy to hear that... maybe we have averted our next war? Is that what you're saying?
Well, so the approval by Congress is the thing. At this point, if they approve the deal, then we can move forward. and history has been made, and it's a major victory for peace in the world. Doesn't solve all the problems. If they don't approve it, then I heard an interview with John Kerry today, and he said basically we will have lost all credibility. Mm-hmm. There will be no sanctions. There will be no inspections. Enrichment will either continue or start. They'll start making a nuclear bomb immediately. All of the partners that we had in the deal will go on and try to make their own deal with them, and we'll be just be left out on our own with some people clamoring for military intervention during the political campaign, and it'll become a big issue on the right. So that's what we're facing if the Congress doesn't approve.
Okay, it sounds like it is going to happen. I mean, I've been watching it a little bit, but I have to say I'm so focused on local politics. It's really great when I have people in who are looking up a little bit higher than that. Stephanie, have you been following it at all?
Not nearly as much as you have. So, you know, I have been following it, but not well. I'm also much more focused on other things, probably.
Yeah, your focus is on glyphosate, yes, and then what's happening in terms of the pesticides and autism, and we will definitely get into that, and we'll be talking about that relative to the political structure.
Right.
And that's what we were speaking about afterwards. You had so much to say, and then you say, oh, I don't know anything about that. Well, yes, you do. You know a lot about that, and you know, if I need to get a political leader in here to help you be able to share a little bit of that. One thing that we'll talk about before he comes in, though, is some of the stuff on statistics. Also, for the listener, we will be expecting Ray Mata coming in, and he's spent several different times, sometimes about a week, over in Mauna Kea. We continue to have a pretty close watch on what's going over there. Anything else, Marshall?
Well, there's an update on what's happening in Greece at the moment. The banks are open. You can still only take out 60 euros a day, although you can take out a week's worth at a time. And so for the moment, the crisis of potential default and exit from the eurozone has been averted. But the economy still is in free fall. Their massive debt burden remains. And, you know, the more austerity measures, nobody really expects that to save the economy and turn it around so they can pay off their debts. There's a new heavy sales tax in place. And, you know, so the people are hurting worse. The economy is in bad condition. And it's, you know, starting to be talked about that the really only solution could involve debt relief from the IMF.
Well, I suppose if there's an upside... That one's a hard one to have an upside, but I like that the Greek people have been standing up and that, you know, when the banks sit there and play with different economies like a pawn, well, I'm glad that they're getting a little bit of pushback, but I'm sorry it's at the expense of the pawns, which is what it sounds like a little bit. Mm-hmm. And it's been, what has it been, maybe 20 years since the euro has been in place?
Oh, I'd have to check my calendar.
Okay. And a couple of other things that are good news that I want to mention. One is the Kolopua apartments, those affordable apartments in Princeville. They are going to be, some of them will be available at the end of this month. August 1st, there'll be some available for renting. If people are curious about that, it is time to call and wave your hand and say, I want one. 808-439-6286. And I went in and I checked them out, and they're actually really pretty nice. From the outside, they look like, little boxes. But inside, they got the kitchens are great. The equipment is really good. Very, very nice, those apartments. And so there's more 3 bedrooms and 2 bedrooms. I think the 1 bedrooms are just about all taken up. But Kolopua apartments available in Princeville.
I got a chance to take a look in there, Felicia. They are very nice.
They're very nice. And I like that they did canoe plants, an endemic species in the landscaping. It's laid out nice. There's the barbecues. A couple weeks ago, we had Kamawela Cobb Adams in from the housing,
right.
Director of Housing, and so just following up on that. Kahlua Days are happening. The farm fair is coming up. So another thing that's going on, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the main team is meeting this week in Lahaina at two of the hotels there. I thought, hey, we've got a new collection of tools in the state of Hawaii that came up just a week ago. So I think we should have an emergency set of rules for public safety. And we could ask the Board of Land and Natural Resources, perhaps, to turn off the plumbing at the hotels. And I think if they were to criminalize implements of white-collar crime, that might be laptops, briefcases, cell phones. That would be a way, maybe, to keep the public safe. So, you know, I think, you know, Hawaii is a good place to do it because it's in the middle of the Pacific. But another good reason is that there's not much population. If they did it in Washington, D.C. or New York or Seattle, they could have very big protests.
I got a phone call there, Felicia. Somebody wanted to know what was the rental price of of one of those units at Kalaupua. And it's $951 for a one-bedroom.
Yeah, and I think for three-bedroom, don't quote me on this because I don't have it in front of me, but it's like $1,335. Mm-hmm. And they do take HUD vouchers, and they're really willing to work with people. So that seems good. Yeah, so the TPP meeting in Maui, I know many people that are activated are going to go over there and make their opinion evident, but it is a small community, so there won't be a lot, I imagine. But anyway, Trans-Pacific Partnership, Stephanie, putting you the little spotlight on you right now for just a moment. When we look at China, how are their agriculture policies? Are you very familiar with what they do there?
I know some, and they've got actually similar problems to the problems we have, and they have a similar situation where they have the government is pretty much controlled by the industry. There's a lot of toxic chemicals being used. It's really, you know, it's been a little bit later. We were sort of there first, but China's catching up. And at the same time, they're getting all the health issues as well. They're getting the autism. They're getting Parkinson's disease, you know, various cancers. All these things are coming up as they're adopting a more chemical-based agriculture. They've had a real revolution, you know, because they used to have all the small farms.
Yeah.
And now the farmers have been displaced by these, you know, giant agricultural farms, and also by imports. They've started importing massive amounts of soy from South America and from the U.S., toxic GMO Roundup Ready soy. And there are people there who are passionate about the problem.
Two of whom are coming next week, is that correct?
These two are coming from Taiwan.
Yeah, which is different
is
than China,
different,
even
yes.
though China feels like Taiwan belongs to them. Is that right?
Yes, it's a very complicated political story between Taiwan and China, with also, of course, people on two sides of the fence on the issue of whether Taiwan should reunite with China or not. But nonetheless, the Taiwanese, I met them. I was in Taiwan, actually, in May, and they invited me to give a talk at an all-day symposium that they had organized, these people who are coming. And
I saw it's at the University of Washington.
They're connected to the University of Washington.
But they live in Taiwan?
Or maybe went to the University of Washington. I saw that, too.
Okay,
I'm
it was
not
a,
sure.
a professor and a PhD student. And
yeah, they're well-educated, these people who are coming. And they're activists in Taiwan, and they hosted this event as activists, and then and they had a very very nice symposium.
And they, if I read the email right, are very much trying to have healthy food in schools.
That's right. That's a focus of theirs right now, is just to fix the school lunch program. And they have another interesting question to ask about. They want to learn as much as they can about the agrochemical industry here and the research they're doing because they're afraid that Taiwan and they want to learn how to fight it. So
right.
They want training on how to help prevent happening in Taiwan what's happened here. Because Taiwan has the same climate with the year-round, all those good opportunities for developing new seeds quickly. In other words, you can get three growing seasons.
There are people in Pakistan that are really paying attention to what's happening here, too, because they do not want to have their traditional agriculture sequestered in this way. Most of these companies aren't there, you know, at least in the area of the people who are communicating, and I'm seeing all the pictures of their traditional farming methods, but there is a lot of pressure, and as we have these world trade agreements, it becomes a bit nerve-wracking. So with China, you know, well, none of us really know what's in this Trans-Pacific Partnership, but when we see the egregious levels of pollution in mainland China, it's concerning that maybe that they would expect that same level of usage in the other countries. And, you know, I think as consumers, we have to sit there and be culpable when we get our cheap cell phones and Macs and, you know, clothes and everything else. When we hunt for our bargains here, it's at the cost of the people there who are in these high-rise factories with...
They're incredible, and you know, I'm aware of these massive factories with these people are really not treated well.
And they have the nets to keep them from dying if they jump out of the, the window.
They had suicides.
Yeah, it's pretty tough. That's pretty tough. So these people that are coming... are they, because I saw an email from them, are they going to be at your talks?
Yes, they're going to be. They said they will be coming to the talk in Waimea, which will happen here next week.
Next Tuesday.
Yes.
At what time? And it's at Waimea Canyon Middle School. She's got to look at the poster.
I've got it right here. Yes, I should have it memorized, but Kauai, 6:30 p.m. is when it starts at Waimea Canyon Middle School cafeteria.
Okay, and on Thursday it's going to be... live broadcast on KKCR, and Dr. Lauren Pang.
That's right.
Will be in here, and I actually got really good feedback from the last show when people really enjoyed both you and Dr. Judy Carman.
Judy Carman, yes, from Australia.
Mm-hmm. So we'll have that. Are these people from China, they're just mostly going to be listening? Are they speaking at all?
Yeah, they're just coming to meet with, they're hoping to meet with anyone who is interested in helping them and sharing ideas about the whole issues of the GMOs and how to fight the industry. And they're coming, they just made their visit coincide with these talks just because they wanted to have an opportunity to come and hear these people speak.
Okay.
Lauren Pang and
So before and after the meeting, will there be opportunities for people to talk and share ideas?
Yes, I would hope so. I mean, I think the organization is a little loosey-goosey right now, but I'm not as involved in it as I should be.
Who's putting it on?
Who's putting on what?
The talks.
Oh,
I know you're a speaker.
Oh, Mickey.
So that would be Hawaii Seed or GMO-free Kauai?
It probably says.
Okay.
Kauai Kind. Oh, Mickey. Well, it just says Mickey. You know Mickey.
Yeah, I know Mickey. And then next week, next Monday, you're going to be in Kona, yeah?
Yes. I'm actually coming back on Monday. There is a talk on Monday which I will miss, which will just be Judy and someone else. I'm not sure.
Okay, but you're going to be over there. Just say where
Sunday.
You are on the other islands. Sunday, Monday on Hawaii Island.
Hand
me the poster. I'll say it.
Tell I'm well prepared.
We have listeners
I'm
from
leaving tomorrow.
The islands. So Maui, tomorrow, July 22nd in Kahului, 7 p.m., Maui Arts and Cultural Center. Thursday and Friday. It's not announced on here, but... it will be, it says contact Christina 283-0251. I see that I do have folks from Maui listening right now. Hawaii Island, Saturday, July 25th, Waimea, 1:30 to 5 p.m. at Tutu's house. Sunday, July 26th in Honoka'a at the National Hawaii Educational Research Center, 6 to 9 p.m. Monday, the 27th in Kona at... County of Hawaii Civic Center, Building B above the harbor from 6 to 9 p.m. Sharon and Shannon, if you're listening, we love you. Kauai, Waimea, Tuesday, Wednesday, Church of the Pacific, 7 p.m. That's in Princeville. It's Waimea Canyon Middle School when they're there at 6:30. Thursday, Lihui, 7 p.m., Kauai Performing Arts Center. Oahu, Friday, July 31st in Honolulu, 7 to 9 p.m. at UH Manoa Art Auditorium. Saturday, August 1st, Honolulu, 3 to 5 p.m. It says Moa Hawaii Toho no Hikari Center. So, I don't know where that is, but people can contact Melissa Yee, 808-292-1179, and they are all on Facebook called Seeds of Truth. So that's great. Sounds like you have a very busy week here.
Yes, this is the first time I've done this many talks at once. So.
And these people coming from Taiwan, they're going to go to all the islands.
A lot of them. I'm not sure their schedule either, but I know they're going to be at several.
I saw their schedule. They are. And so
they're really very serious about it, I think, and they're just hoping to connect up with people. So anyone who is interested, and certainly they'll be at talks, so that'll be one way to meet them. But also hopefully Melissa will try to organize some things too.
Yes. And then so Thursday your talk is going to be live broadcast on KKCR, and on Wednesday we are going to have a talk on the climate change event. I don't have that poster right in front of me, but that's going to be an interesting one. That is at Niumalu Canoe Club, and I see my yaw is doing me a favor. Oops, that's the wrong poster. Okay, so anyway, we're going to do that one, and it's interesting with climate change because different scientists are all in different agreements on it. I'd say the majority of them say that climate change is happening and it is man-made. I'm very agreeable on all of this. I say, well, it is happening. You can tell just if you cut down some trees or just clear an area in your yard, it's going to dry up. So it does make a difference. But I also have watched the JPL website, NASA, where we see the magnetosphere is wobbling, and you know, I haven't followed it deeply enough, but you know, the thought is that there are different celestial bodies that move around and that causes a wobble on the Earth. The wobble is evident on the axis. Marshall's nodding his head. Do you have any mana'o on that, Marshall?
You know, I've heard such things.
Yeah.
It's like we can tell there's more erratic behavior. Things are changing and things are more erratic. That's for sure. So whatever the whatever the model is, it's certainly full of unknowns.
Certainly full of unknowns. But we are happy. I'm going to be actually at both of these places helping to do the live broadcast. So the one in Niumalu, that's got Ruby Papp, who is with the state in the shoreline setbacks, Ben Sullivan from the county of Kauai, Jan Ten Bruggenkate, who, you know, he's involved in lots of things. He's a science writer, an environmental writer. And then I think his name is Stephen Taylor. He is from KCC. So, you know, I'm really happy to be entertaining what our governance groups are anticipating and thinking about. You are listening to Kauai Soapbox. This is Felicia. Marshall's in here helping me, and Dr. Stephanie Seneff is also in here with me, and we are soon to expect Gary Hooser. And right now, I want you to hear about the Tahitian Festival that's coming up. So KKCR, Hanalei, KEQA, Kilauea.
Heiva is a celebration of Tahitian culture. The 14th annual Heiva i Kauai Yorana Tahiti will be held at Kapa'a Beach Park on August 1st and 2nd. Gates open at 9 a.m., opening ceremony at 9:30. 2 days of dance and drumming competitions with Polynesian artists, cultural demonstrations, jewelry and accessories direct from Tahiti, silent auction and island foods. A special guest Tahitian dance group from Honolulu, Te Wai Ura Nui, will present traditional Otea and modern Aparima and Akupurotu dances, sponsored by HTA, County of Kauai and Geico, 822-9447 or heivaikauai.com.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. Okay, Stephanie, I'm going to put the spotlight on you for a moment here. I want to talk about statistics because, you know, I hear you know, you can use statistics for anything. I know that. You can say, you can find almost any trend that you want, but there are varying degrees of how it gets close or apart from what might really be the trend line. Can you speak to the beginner or the novice about what the statistics are? Because where you have done your modeling on autism and different health challenges as they've trended along with the use of glyphosate and eating GMOs and crops that are doused in Roundup, you're seeing a trend line. You have studied this more in computer modeling than in a clinic. Is that
right.
correct?
That's right. Yes, we're just looking at, and we're looking at very gross numbers. We're looking at autism rates across the country, and then we're looking at things like glyphosate usage on the corn and soy crops that go into the processed food. So it's a very loose connection. It's like it's not like you've got a person, an individual person who's been exposed and you've seen harm. It's very collective and you know, across the nation. So one could fault you for that. But this is, for example, the way cigarettes were first nailed, that they saw rises in lung cancer with increased smoking. They saw correlations between lung cancer and smoking. The way I look at it is if you take the perspective of, you take the fact that there are many diseases that are going up sharply right now. Autism is a very good example, also Alzheimer's disease, some very serious conditions that are alarmingly on the rise. All these gut disorders, celiac disease. Various cancers are going up, like thyroid cancer and pancreatic cancer, very serious cancer that has a very high mortality rate. We have to say these things are going up, so there is a cause.
Is there any cross-correlation with cell phones and all these EMF towers or Fukushima, like when I think thyroid cancer? Maybe.
Absolutely, and I think those things are probably also all playing a role. These are other things that are going up, which also correlate quite well. When you look at toxic chemicals in the food, and you ask the question, if you think there is a connection with toxic chemicals in the food, which one would it be? If you phrase the question that way, it's very clear the answer, because glyphosate is the only one that's going up in step with these diseases. And it matches pretty much all of them very, very well, the curves.
And have you put a line together where we would look, like if we were to take that map, I mean that graph, have you put the incidence of when Fukushima happened, like if you were to put a bar like that to see if we saw a bend in the line?
That would be the thing to do, and I haven't looked at Fukushima specifically, but it's clear that that is an extra source of danger in today in the world that wasn't there before. And so it's something you could find, and probably others are looking into that.
It might be interesting to put little line points on there, like when Fukushima happened, when the Gulf oil spill happened, when different environmental indicators, because we're also eating shrimp and things like this in these places that have this other area of toxicity, because I would think that, like, if there is any kind of crease or bend in the lines, that we might see that is actually impacting. And if it doesn't, well, then it's okay, you know, maybe it's not that too.
Right. I mean, an interesting example that I've been studying the vaccine adverse event reporting system, and that data is quite interesting. And one thing quite remarkable in that data is a very sharp rise in the number of reports. These are reports of people who were who had some kind of a bad reaction to a vaccine, and they're available from the U.S. government on the web. Over the period of time, maybe 2001, 2002, there was a very sharp rise in the number of reports that had autism, anxiety, or ADHD as mentioned in the report. A very sharp rise. And then it bumps around, but it stays high after that. And that curve, that sharp rise had been puzzling me for quite some time. I can confirm that it's also a sharp rise in the amount of aluminum in those, the aluminum in the vaccines, that you can measure the total amount of the aluminum in the vaccines in the reports, and that also matches that rise. So it makes it, you feel that it's linked to the aluminum. But the other thing is that the only other curve I've been able to find to match it that has also the sharp rise is very, very surprising, which is the use of a soybean-based oil in cooking. So replacing, for example, lard, butter, or even those trans fats like the Crisco, replacing those with the cheap soybean oil that was coming out at that time, there was a massive replacement in the population in the choice of oils. And it was partly under pressure because we were being told the trans oils are bad. McDonald's switched over their French fries from using lard to using basically these cheap oils, soybean. You know, there's cottonseed oil, soybean oil, corn oil. These are the cheap oils that are pulled out of the core crops that are the GMO Roundup Ready crops.
A joke that I say sometimes is living is fatal, because it just seems like everything has a consequence. It's pretty tough. Like you read about, well, the orangutans are dying because of the palm oil, you know. Just about everything we do in the modern world is impacting somewhere.
Right.
And it is, I think that we're really afraid of being inconvenienced. I think that that is the number one fear of most people in, you know, the modern culture. We don't want to have to change our habits.
We get very comfortable, I think, once we've gotten into, and you know, you see countries, you look at China and how they switched over to be an industrialized country, and that was considered progress. All of a sudden, they didn't have to spend so much time growing food because they were adopting the methods we've adopted a long time ago for growing food. And this gives you this false sense of extra time to devote to technology, you know, and to advance and all this kind of progress. And meanwhile, everybody's being poisoned. You know, and that's just happening slowly, and so you're getting sicker and sicker. Our population is really going to have a crisis soon, maybe already. I mean, we already have a healthcare crisis. We can't afford all these people who can't afford healthcare who are very sick, you know, with strange diseases that we never saw before.
Yes. Well, I mean, we have a lot of different challenges like that. A lot of sickness, a lot of trendings. So we have those challenges. Hey, we've got somebody in here right now. Gary, say hi.
Hi, Felicia.
Hey, Gary.
KKCR, thank you for all the work, Stephanie.
Yeah, and thank you for coming in. I you know, there are so many things that come up, and it's hard for me to stay on top of everything. And we have something called, this is another one of those Orwellian names, the Safe and Accurate Food Labeling Act, which is AKA the Dark Act. Can you tell us about that? Have you been following that?
I've been following it like you, Felicia. There's lots of stuff going on, and I do my best to follow everything, but that's not quite possible. I have been following the Dark Act a little bit, and it's my understanding that it starts out basically as a bill in the U.S. Congress to prevent states and other lower levels of government from labeling genetically modified food products. And I think the committee voted just today and passed it out, and the House will vote in a couple of days, if not next week. But it's apparently changed now to be even worse than it was before. Not only are they attempting to take the states' rights away for labeling, but trying to take states and counties' rights away, period, in terms of regulating GMOs in the industry.
So is it just about the labeling of the food? It isn't something about the pesticides, right? Have they taken away the states' right on that? Because I read something else, and I really, it was unclear. It wasn't clear to me that they, in fact, did a preemption for what would be preempting a 2491, even at the state's level, where they don't have to disclose.
Yeah, I think they basically are attempting to preempt all GE, genetically engineered regulations at the state or local level, period. Whether it involves pesticide use or not, I'm not 100% clear, but I know from what I read, it tries to keep us from regulating genetically modified products. Like, for example, 2491 had a small amount of regulation requiring disclosure of genetically modified crops. And so this act in Congress would prohibit us from doing that.
Okay, yeah. So I'm all about home rule as much as possible. I want municipalities to be able to do what what they choose in their own area. So it's really troubling to see the states preempting that, then the national governments preempting that, and then, you know, beyond that, seeing even, you know, we don't even really know what these international trade agreements are, because they, interestingly, won't even be visible to the public even after they're signed into law. I think one has a 4-year sundown of being hidden, and then a 5-year sundown. Have you seen that in any other kind of politics?
You know, I haven't. And unfortunately, this is the trend globally to disempower local communities. Under the guise of uniformity, we'll make it all good for business, so business only has to follow one rule, and not taking into consideration that different communities have different needs. I like the saying that it should be a floor, not a ceiling. Mm-hmm. The federal government or state government should put in a minimal level of regulation to protect us, a basic level, I should say. And then if states or counties want to be more protective, they should be allowed to do so.
I find it incredible to think that we should be have our rights taken away from us to actually regulate things like, you know, chemical usage and things like that. I actually was really surprised in Massachusetts. I had given a talk in Wellesley, and then the woman who had hosted the talk said she was part of the League of Women Voters. She said, I'm going to look into seeing what we could do to try to ban glyphosate in public places in
and
Wellesley.
And Wellesley is a school?
Is a town.
A town.
In Massachusetts. And she looked into it and reported back to me that she was not allowed to do that because the state already had a law that said that towns, individual towns, could not regulate their pesticide usage in public places. I was really shocked. They're doing this in California, by the way. There's a city in California, Richmond, I think it is, that has banned glyphosate usage in the city, a very recent development, which I find really great. It might be a county. I think it's a city. It might be a county. Richmond City, I think, in California. And that could be a movement. I mean, people could start to do these things grassroots. But, of course, they are interested in taking the power away from us so that we're not allowed to do these things.
And who is they?
Well, they is the higher levels of the government, right, which who are being probably controlled by the industry, I think.
And industry, if I can interject real quickly, during the 2491, there was a statement made that is on camera, and it just sticks with me and many other people, that when the industry was asked during one of the hearings, why are they fighting so hard? All we're trying to do as a county was disclosure and buffer zones, basically, and study the issue. And why were they fighting so hard? And their answer was because they were concerned that other communities might want to do the same thing. That's exactly what they're afraid of.
I believe I was at that county council meeting, and Mel had asked Kirby Kester the question. Is that correct?
There was a number of us asking questions. I'm not sure exactly who asked the question. But Kirby was the person who responded, yes. And I'll never forget it. He said, there are other implications besides the law that we're concerned about. And when asked what were those implications, he said, we're concerned that other communities might want to do the same thing.
Right. And we've seen in Oregon them doing some stuff. We also have Ray Mata in the studio. Ray, say hi.
Hey, aloha, everyone.
Let me make sure you are mic'd up okay. Try again.
Hey, aloha, everyone.
Okay. And Ray, do I hear another language in you? Can you speak something other than English?
I can speak Spanish.
And so, where were you born?
I was born on an army base in El Paso, Texas.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But my parents from both sides actually came from Cuba.
Oh, okay. We were just talking about Cuba.
I heard you. Yeah, I'm very excited about that.
Okay. So I was wondering, I thought I heard a little bit of Spanish. So you are fluent in that, but you're like English is your main.
Yeah. I was brought up in a house where my grandmother lived with us, or at least for my cradle years, my first 2 years of life. And she spoke Spanish, and I think her presence kind of forced everybody else to speak Spanish. So it was a mix of English and Spanish that I got, you know, so I can understand it emotionally. I'm not like 100% fluent. I think I'm more like a sixth grader. I speak with that kind of vocabulary and that kind of enthusiasm.
Well, and your mother-in-law speaks Spanish.
And my mother-in-law,
who lives with you.
Yeah.
And doesn't speak English.
At all.
So that helps.
It helps a lot. It's brought the language back to me.
Okay, because the reason why I brought that up is I didn't know if you had a different country of origin. The answer is no. But, because in South America, it seems like the most egregious impacts is where this industry is, you know, really expressing the worst of its potential. Have you seen stuff to that effect, Gary?
You know, I've read a lot about Argentina, I think, recently, and a lot of times I think it's the workers may not have the education and be able to read the English to apply the chemicals according to the label, even if that was going to be safe. And so there's not the same worker safety rules, I think, in those countries.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I don't have this verified. It's hard to tell what's true and what's not. I was in Cuba, actually, in 2001. Mm-hmm. I was there for a week. And it was around that time, I think, that they were dealing with the oil crisis, and mm-hmm. they were moving to remove petroleum from their industry and particularly from their agriculture, so that they were moving toward more mm-hmm. sustainable organic agriculture at that time. Mm-hmm. And I think recently I saw something, and I haven't followed through on it, but something's happening with respect to just annihilating GMO in that country.
Did you hear that Cuba has opened relations with the United States as of yesterday?
Yeah, I'm aware of that.
Do you have extended family there?
I do. A lot of them are getting old. Yeah. There's one cousin that I'm in touch with and in communication with. So, yeah.
That's one of the reasons that you can go there right now.
Yeah, and I'm not even, I'm, at this point, I'm in research because I want to go back. I plan on going back very soon. I just need to find out, because I have family there, can I just go direct, or do I still have to jump from another country, and how that whole thing works?
I believe you could have done it already, even actually, because my neighbor started life in Cuba, and he has been able to go back because of that.
Cool.
So there have been loopholes anyway, but it's opening up. But it'll be interesting to see, you know, how their agriculture shifts. Stephanie and Gary, while I have you both in here, I want you to be able to freely ask each other questions or dialogue. I got two really powerhouses of knowledge in here, and so for me to be narrowing the conversation through my lens of knowledge, I want to be careful to not really limit the conversation on this. Do you have any mana'o, Gary, on what you're seeing in the macro political elements as it is impacted by science?
Well, you know, my background is not in science, and my recent background is in politics and in government, and before that in small business. And so I'll just relate to some of the things I'm working on right now, which you might be interested in. Given the news about glyphosate's probable carcinogenic status, and every day it seems like there's something new that comes out about glyphosate and other related pesticides, chemicals, I sent the four large chemical companies and every golf course and the county and the state all a letter asking them to provide me with the amount of glyphosate they were using in 2014, last year, a year-to-date figure. And then I asked the four companies if they would please demonstrate their good neighborliness and start including glyphosate in their monthly reports. And the response I got from the chemical companies was from their attorneys.
Wow.
Saying, you know, thanks but no thanks. And they asked me some questions. I sent them a follow-up letter. Interestingly, that neither the state nor the county have responded in a timely fashion, so I sent them what they call a UIPA request, which is an official information request.
What does UIPA mean?
That's a Uniform Information Protection Act, which every citizen's entitled to it. Generally speaking, there's a lot of public information that the government agencies have. And like, for example, how much glyphosate the county uses on its roadways, that's public information. And I asked them as a council member on council stationery for that information and did not get a response. And so I then filed a UIPA request, and they're required to respond within 10 days. And that 10 days is coming up soon. I also made the request from every golf course. And kudos to the two golf courses that responded was the Prince Golf Course and the Kauai Lagoons. Both responded with how much glyphosate they use. But I don't want to really talk about that until I get all the information. It's not fair to just take it in snippets. But
we can acknowledge them that they have
responded. Because to be clear, Felicia, I don't have the legal authority to make them provide me with that information. You know, I'm just merely trying to do my job as a council member and asking them. And they chose to respond. And unfortunately, the good neighbors, the large
companies,
chose not to at this point.
I think they can smell the political wind. you know, that is, we have a majority for the most part on the council that is protecting them. And I would say that the state government, there's at least a couple key senators in there that are protecting them. We have a caller that's going to ask a question. Aloha, you're on the air.
Aloha. Well, gosh, just since I tried to call, so much has come up. One thing is, like, I hope that Kauai can find, like, a sister city in Cuba, you know, and before they start running out, you know, it'd be nice to get a big choice on the matter. And maybe your guest would have a suggestion. Another concern of mine is this home rule situation as regards GMOs and stuff, and how hard it is to find allies, especially hard enough on our own island. But if you try to do it inter-island, you get nothing from Oahu and Maui, and I mean, and Molokai and Hawaii are like our only allies. And I think we ought to try to go to other countries and try to get allies in that regard, and have places, make sister cities or some kind of communication with those countries. And one in mind, have in mind Russia, because President Putin has declared that Russia is going to ban. They have some GMOs, but they're going to ban GMOs. And so if we could get support, like, from Russia government, and different governments are opposed to GMOs, because this island is like, we're an arms manufacturer, except we're not making missiles. We're supporting GMO companies. It'd be just like we had concentration camps right in our neighborhood, and 100 years from now, none of us are going to be here around here. Most that we're talking on this phone right now, but then they'll say, how could you let concentration camps be in your neighborhood? Oh, well, we could smell it. We knew it was there. We said things, but we couldn't do anything about it. What's the same thing? We got to go outside the United States to get any kind of support.
Well, thank you for that question. I'm happy to let Gary field that. Did you have a second question?
Well, there was another question when Gary brought it up about the golf courses and how Pinto Golf Course. I'm not too far away from where you guys are at in your studio. And there's about your 100 feet. 5:30 in the morning, about 5 o'clock in the morning, they crank up the fungicide mixer over there, the 2,4-D kind of product. And it's right there about 100 feet from your studio. Just go down the hill where they excavated, sitting right there. They start up the motor at 5 o'clock in the morning. And they mix it up so they can aerify it, and then it goes out on the golf courses. You can get all kinds of things about glyphosate. We don't have any because they don't use it. If you go over down to the maintenance yard, you'll see, or just look when you drive by the gate. Just look in there. There's a 55-gallon drum, or was, that have all the empty plastic bottles of the. They changed the name so many times, but it's Syngenta product. And they mix it up, and now there's going to be the low-income center right downwind. You know, we all live in this little bubble of air right here, and then that low-income center. You check where halfway between you and the first house. Actually closer to you is where they mix this product.
I will look. Thank you so much. So I'm going to let Gary field these things. Thank you.
Okay.
Aloha. Thank you. I can at least start. I know Stephanie's working on some at the international level as well. I think it's absolutely right. We need to reach out to our brothers and sisters around the world that are facing similar situations. I really came home when we went to Switzerland and met with people over there. And I know Stephanie's was in Taiwan recently, and there's people from Taiwan coming. And I expect there to be an international gathering in Hawaii on this topic in January of 2016. I'm talking to people about that, and I fully expect that to happen. But why don't you talk about the Taiwan?
I already did talk about them before you came, but that's true. They are coming.
And there are some people from Pakistan who want to come to it. So okay. I'll try and connect you by email or something.
Right. When we were in Switzerland, we met with some Pakistani gentlemen who were involved in the labor movement and who had been treated very poorly by Syngenta in Pakistan.
These are people who've been following the issue on Facebook. Okay. So it's a different crowd. But, they've seen my posts that's kind of coming, and they're gathering information from their farms and wanting to learn more.
There was an event in Beijing that I attended a couple summers ago that was really fantastic, and they brought together experts from around the world who were concerned about GMOs and the chemicals used on the foods, and they had a wonderful symposium where there was a large audience of Chinese people listening to what we had to say. It was really wonderful. We got to meet each other, you know. People like Judy. I met Judy there, Judy Carman.
You know, people tend to focus on the issue that's in their backyard. You know, with us here on Kauai, it tends to be the pesticide use, the heavy pesticide, restricted use of pesticides.
Or even right next to the station here. Yes, we just heard about that.
But when you start looking at it more globally, you realize it's all part of this interwoven fabric of corporate control of the food system. And that comes in many forms and has many implications, from labor to environmental to health to just, you know, control of the food supply.
Well, I know I'm really excited about the projects that I'm involved in here on Kauai, where we are actually outcreating that problem, outgrowing that problem. And it is a massive problem, but it takes finding solutions, how we heal the land, how we grow our own food, doing neighborhood agriculture, all kinds of elements like that.
I love that. I love the idea of just focusing on the solution, because it gets very frustrating when you start to play the political game and you realize how much opposition there is to where we need to be going at the political level. But if you just do it grassroots, actually just change the practices yourself. I mean, that is so noble. I admire greatly the people who are doing that.
Yeah, I think it's happening. And I think even though the resistance is really strong by industry, they wouldn't be having to force laws all over the place to force the food literally down your throat if there weren't people not wanting to eat it, right? If they had a product that was in demand, it would be they couldn't keep it on the shelves.
And that's one of the benefits of all the work that many of us are doing, is the increased awareness by our neighbors, by our community, and around the world of people eating good food. You know, I was at a athletic event yesterday, and there was a young woman there who had a little baby, might have been 2 or 3 years old, and we were talking, and I don't know her that well, but she pointed out to me that the baby was on an all-organic diet, and it wasn't for any reason other than she wanted to do for her baby the best that she could do. And some of her friends kind of teased her about it. You know, they want to give the child other things. But she said, no, you know, I want to give my baby the best I can. And she's probably not a KKCR listener, or I think she's not even on social media. But she just knew in her heart that this is the right thing to do for her child.
That's great. And also Costco, you know, has really gotten on board. There's so many more organic choices now at Costco. And they've even outdone Whole Foods. They sell more organic food now than Whole Foods does.
I know Foodland is really having a hard time keeping it on the shelf. Do you have a caller who had a question, Marshall?
Yeah, we had a caller who didn't want to go on the air, but he just felt that comparing the GMO companies on Kauai to the concentration camps
pretty strong.
It was going too far, and he felt hurt by that and felt really strongly. So I just wanted to pass that on.
I want to say fair enough on that. Because that is a very, very profound thing that happened in World War II. And the challenges that we're having here are far more subtle. I didn't want to make the first caller feel bad, but I did think that was really a heavy statement. You're listening to KKCR, Hanalei Ke'ekua Kilauea. This is Felicia with Kauai Soapbox. Marshall's helping with the phones. I've got Ray Mata, who pretty soon will be sharing a little bit about Hawaii Island. And I have Gary Hooser, Councilman Gary Hooser, and Dr. Stephanie Seneff. This program, Kauai Soapbox, is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with The Copper Man and 808 Equipment Rental.
KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea, K224CQ, Anahola, K284AL, Haleiwa.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of KKCR, its board of directors, staff, volunteers, or underwriters.
The Copper Man. Copper, stainless steel, and galvanized aluminum. We specialize in ornamental and custom work and fabricate and install any kind sheet metal work, residential and commercial. Serving Kauai for over 30 years. We're still talking. HarryConti.com. That's HarryConti.com. Or 639-3456.
808 Equipment Rentals, providing tractor, bobcat, and BCS tiller services island-wide, including pasture mowing, garden bed raising, vegetation removal, terracing, gravel spreading, and more. 808 Equipment Rentals in Molawa'a. 823-1000.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. So when I brought up Ray for a moment, the reason I was bringing that up, and we'll talk a little bit about what's happening with the movement on Mauna Kea in probably more like a half hour. We would go more deep into that. But I blend these two issues a little bit because there is a movement of people wanting to determine their own path, their own home rule. And what I see is the Hawaiian movement, I hate to just give that the big title, the Hawaiian. I get criticized for doing that, so it's not just all Hawaiians, but Kanaka Mo'oli movement of self-determination and people who are looking for social and environmental justice, they are tending to blend together a bit. And sometimes it's not so easy to do. Sometimes there's division, and it can get divided over things like hunting dogs and barking dogs and fishing, and some people are very sensitive and don't eat any meat, and you know, how are we different but how we like? And so we're working with you know, trying to work together as opposed to some separation. And you know, do any of you have some thoughts on that?
You know, I personally have seemed to have seen an awakening, if you would, by people all over the state, if not all over the world. People getting more engaged and more feeling more responsible for their own futures. And just a comment briefly about the other comment about the concentration camps. Mm-hmm. You know, that may very well have been too harsh. At the same time, I want to be clear. I think real harm is coming to our mm-hmm. community. I think people's health is being impacted, not just sore throats. Down the road, 20 years, 30 years from now, harm is coming. And I think that is the bottom line, and I wouldn't be doing this if I didn't think that that was happening. And we need to step up as a community to prevent that from happening. Otherwise, we will be responsible. You know, whether you compare it to asbestos or DDT or PCBs or Agent Orange, this is the same type of thing. And Mauna Kea, again, it's preventing harm to culture, preventing harm to the environment, preventing harm to sensitive areas, harm that's being imposed upon us by large businesses and major corporations without the cooperation or approval of the people that actually live in the communities.
And it seems that it's in collusion with the government. And I use a loaded word like that because the government is supposed to be protecting the people, and it seems like they're protecting the corporations from the people. And I would think actually government should be trying to find that balance, because some of the corporations do some good here, or like we are functioning in a global economy, but how do we find that nice balance?
You know, we had a caller who wanted to ask, how about the sugar companies and from the plantation days? What do we know about the chemicals that they left behind?
Now, that is an issue you probably know, right?
Well, I know that the sugar used a tremendous amount of atrazine. And I know they conducted a lot of practices, like on Maui right now with the burning, which is not healthy. And it's frustrating personally when people hearken back to the grand days of the plantation. And people remember it fondly, but I think history will show that they were not good stewards of the land. And they also, I know personally, of pesticide mixing plants abandoned. You know, there's this place, Poison Valley. A few of us know where Poison Valley is,
Ka'ava,
on the west side. Ka'ava.
Ka'ava behind Kekaha.
In Kilauea here, there was a neighborhood built on arsenic.
And I live there.
Yeah. Mm. And so they were not good stewards. And yes, they provided jobs. Yes, they supported maybe culture in the hospitals, but they were not good stewards. And I think history will say that.
Yeah, and I think, you know, anyone who gets in their own backyard garden or gets on a small farming agricultural project, even the larger ones, and starts looking at the land and what they're actually dealing with is a soil that's very depleted, They're having to spend a lot of time, effort, energy, and money to kind of reinvigorate what was depleted during that time, too. I've seen it with my own eyes, you know.
And we've got a bioremediation grant going right now with Regenerations that I'm excited about, and we're working with, you know, indigenous microorganisms and mycelium. I call that the micro herd. I mean, I'm not giving up. You know, there are ways to make this better. There are ways to make this better.
And to be clear also, we need economic development to a certain extent. We need jobs. We need to, you know, have the money go around so people can work and buy things. It's just when you get into plantation mentality, monopolies, you know, two or three businesses in Hawaii, it was a big five. And look at, we have here the big
another
four.
Big, well, you know, yeah, that big five,
big five
in the state.
If you count Monsanto. Mm-hmm. And so that is a big key to the problem. It's not that we don't want jobs, that we don't want business economic development. It's the nature of that development. Monocropping is bad. It just is. There's no question about it. And it's that dependence on any one industry.
So let's clarify why monocropping is bad. It's that really everything but that one particular plant gets to live there, right? We pretty much sterilize the soil and you know, everything else that had a whole cycle, the life cycle, gets depleted, gets taken. And that's part of why we are having these climate issues, too. And we're having erosion.
In fact, the agriculture plays a significant role in climate change. And it's not just the poisons that we're putting on the crops. It's also the phosphate and nitrate-based fertilizers, which are not natural. You know, organic fertilizer is so rich with all kinds of nutrients. And if you just put phosphate and nitrate on the crops, you really mess up the entire ecosystem in the soil. You kill the microbes. You get rid of the organic matter. You get soil runoff. You look at California right now. They have a terrible drought, and I suspect it's because of many years of using chemical-based agriculture. They have completely destroyed their soil so that it can't even hold water anymore, and the water just washes off, and that nitrate and that phosphate gets out into the waterways. They've had crises, for example, in the Great Lakes where people are getting poisoned by the water, by the drinking water, because there's too much. You get these algae blooms and you get these toxic biological toxins that are produced by these algae that can make you sick.
And what I see is that we have so much culpability, every single one of us. I mean, even when people are vegan, still with their eating rice or soy or quinoa or whatever it is, that's monocropping. And when what I often field on this show, no pun intended, is, you know, if we don't hunt the pigs or the goats, then we have a whole nother cascade of problems. And we need those dogs that go up and help with that hunting. And we are their apex predator here. And, you know, it's hard to argue completely with nature. Right? We have the teeth that we do for a reason, right? And so how do we sit there and work through all this? You know, we have, everybody likes to take a shower. Everybody likes to be able to use all their water. And when we see the fish dying and the reef dying and we're able to blame all kinds of things on that, all these wells are being drilled and we divert water. You know, I think Kilauea mostly gets their water from Kapaa, and so that water doesn't make it out onto the coral the way it once did, and so it heats up that area because the cold water isn't coming out. We have a caller waiting. Aloha, thank you for holding. You are on the air.
Hey, Felicia, just say, maybe you can say something about the movie Ina that's going to be playing this weekend at KCC, and they added another night. Sunday, it kind of is the same topic of what you guys are talking about, and maybe you can pass along.
Okay, well, so let you help me do that. It's Saturday at what time?
I believe it's at 4 p.m. on Saturday, and again, 4 p.m. on Sunday.
I'm going to look. Okay, that doesn't sound right. But
maybe it's 7 p.m. on Saturday, but I did hear it was,
I think it's 4 p.m. on Sunday, but I think you're right. It's 7 p.m. maybe on Saturday and 4 p.m. on Sunday. It was what I remember, but
and
you better check.
And it's at the Performing Arts Center. It's 7 p.m. on Saturday, and this is
okay.
The first that I heard that it's opening up on Sunday. We
yeah.
had Joan in here last week mentioning it.
I've just seen the trailer, and it looks like a really great piece of work, and I plan on being there.
Yeah, I do
yeah,
too.
Yeah, so there is a website called, I don't have the full website, but I haven't even gotten my tickets yet. I'm just thankful they're adding a Sunday show. But if you want to go, Felicia, on Sunday, I'm going, and I'd love to have you drive with me.
Okay, I'll try and do that. I will be going on Saturday also.
Okay, my dear.
I believe you have to get your tickets online, yeah?
Yes, and I don't have the website, like I said, but maybe you guys can Google it really quick and tell the viewers or the listeners.
Okay, I'll put Marshall on that, because we'll find that. Thank you, and it is in alignment with that. It's a short program, but there's going to be music and a lot of discussion, and I was happy to see when I looked at the trailer that it's largely focused on people with a multiple generational history here. I know that does matter to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Thank you so much.
Great show. Aloha.
Aloha.
I have a question about, so I'm going to be traveling to the mainland this actually tomorrow night. I'm going to be gone for 2 weeks. So for people who can't be here for that screening, is it going to keep playing? Is there going to be other opportunities?
It will be online for free.
Okay.
And then people can do showings with it. It's a 22-minute film, but the idea is just to get it blasted out. I think the more people are aware, as we all change our behavior, and this is what I say to people who work in the industry. This is an adaptable industry. I would say innovation is a strength of these big international companies. And when the market changes, they can change. As I was lovingly saying to BASF and Kirby Kester at the time, hey, you got over cassette tapes and VHS, you mm-hmm. know? You just change and adapt. That's the business model. Right now, there's a stubbornness and an intention to be able to hold the food supply. But I don't think the people working for these companies, that's their mentality. And I think that, every company is somewhat grassroots, even no matter how dictatorial it might seem. Because as people working have a change of heart or a stronger understanding, it percolates up as the market changes and the people change. You know, we can have constructive change. We're going to have to. We're going to have to. We have really only been doing this large-scale agriculture since World War II.
And it is starting to show a lot of cracks. I mean, because they're having so much trouble with the weeds. The weeds are getting resistant. They have to use more and more chemicals. They have to add atrazine and glyphosate and have resistance to both of those GMO engineered into the crop. It's an escalating war that we're losing against the weeds, and they have to recognize that. And meanwhile, they're destroying the soil. So they're going to see that they're not sustaining the agriculture. They're slowly eroding each year, making everything worse and worse. And at some point, they're going to recognize it's just not going to work. I mean, it's not even going to have to take us to tell them that. It's going to be obvious.
You know, and one other piece of news I'd like to share with the listeners and everyone here, and it goes to the question of government doing its job and money, basically, because everyone wants to save money. And what happens is they see environmental protections as impediments to development, as impediments to making money. And the Agribusiness Development Corporation, which controls over 10,000 acres here on our island, it manages state lands.
Agricultural Business
Agribusiness, ADC.
Agribusiness, okay.
ADC, Agribusiness Development Corporation, manages around 11,000 or more acres here, most of it on the west side, most of it leased to those four companies. Mm. And they put on their agenda for tomorrow a proposal to seek an exemption from an NPDES permit.
Can you say what NPEDS is?
N is a Nancy, P-D-E-S.
But what does that stand for?
I'll read it for a second. It's the, I think it's a, it'll take me a second to find
it
here on my phone to get it exactly. But basically, this manages runoff into streams, which into the ocean. So the permit is about water quality. The permit is to make sure that an excess of soil and pesticides and chemicals do not run off into the streams. And so you have the manager of all this land who leases to these large companies saying, we would like an exemption rather than follow the rules.
That they're asking?
Yes.
And where are they asking this at?
Well, this is on their meeting agenda for tomorrow.
Where's their meeting? Is it public?
It's in Honolulu.
Oh.
And I did send in testimony opposing it. I think a few other people did. I just found out about it recently. And I'll get the exact in a second while you talk.
Okay. And, Marshall, I can tell you have something that you are...
The Saturday show of Ina is sold out. They did add a second show on Sunday. And you can get tickets at alohaina.eventbrite.com. It is going to be at 4 p.m.
So eventbrite.com, 4 p.m. on Sunday.
Go to alohaina.eventbrite.com. That'll take you right to where you need to be to buy those tickets.
Okay, thank you. So we're learning about that exemption that they're looking for.
It's a NPDES, which stands for National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System. And normally they would have to get that through the Department of Health Clean Water Branch, but they're asking or discussing asking for a federal exemption to that requirement.
So who are they asking it from?
From the board. Just
they're asking the ADC board, or the ADC board is asking the DLNR, or who are they asking?
The ADC board is deciding whether or not to seek this exemption.
Oh, okay. So if you're listening, ADC board... No, don't ask to seek this exemption.
And it's interesting that the current permit they have was actually issued to Kekaha Sugar Company in 1976.
Wow.
And then was inherited, basically carried over in 2007 when the ADC took over. And they've been just getting it now expired in 2011. And due to the backlogs, and, you know, they've just let them go with the one that was first in 1976. Mm. And so it's important to, you know, with the chemicals, the irrigation needs, to protect those west side lands. There's a lot at stake here.
So I'm guessing that they're asking for an exemption because it would be too expensive to actually properly deal with the problem.
We can only surmise,
right.
but I believe it's money, and it's no telling what is going to be found, and then there would be mitigation. I mean, if they do the studies and find out that there is a lot of risk, then they might be told, well, you can't do it as much, or you have to be further away from the streams, or there would probably be mitigating requirements. So, yes, it's at the end of the day, it's about money.
Right.
Mm-hmm. We have a caller. Aloha, you're on the air. Aloha, you are on the air.
I think ABC is one of those public-private corporations that was formed in the YAA administration, and so essentially they're supposed to work for us, the people, yeah. And I mean, for a living, I do work on writing NPEDS permits and monitoring compliance and that sort of thing. So I have a little bit of experience with those things. And sometimes, you know, it's been since the Nixon administration that from the people's side, that we've been trying to actually establish the Clean Water Act. And so that's why, you know, some things, like you say, oh, it's carried over from Kekaha Sugar in 76. So, you know... Certainly, this public-private corporation, you know, heads I don't believe they should really even be seeking the exemption. They should be updating it since in 76, full compliance with the Clean Water Act wasn't necessary. And so, you know, some of us, you know, we've been, you know, oh, that's the one thing Nixon did good, but it's not even enforced yet. You know, the power plants don't follow it yet, and no agriculture follows it yet. Yeah, agriculture already is exempt from a lot of the Clean Water Act standards, and it's been all these, you know, 45 years almost that we've been, you know, waiting, and the planet's been waiting, and Gaia's been waiting, yeah, and I'm getting old, yeah, you know, I'm almost ready to retire. Mm-hmm. I've been waiting for this, and I just, I find it really disheartening in some ways to, you know, to kind of smile and giggle about it, but it's not a smiling and giggling situation, yeah. So I just wanted to add that, and I never heard about all of this and everything, yeah, or even, I mean, gosh, when the agricultural uses change, those guys should have, you know, I know they have administrative rules where they don't follow the actual rule of law, but they should have had to reapply for their water diversions and so many things, yeah. And so I just encourage everybody who's listening to I don't know how to reach ABC.
ADC, Agribusiness Development Corporation.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm
so I will put
I've
a
been
link.
I've been in the sun all day. Enforce, you know, ensuring an adherence to an NPEDS permit. So my brain cells are coagulating.
Well, thank you, for calling in.
It's a serious matter. Aloha.
Yes, aloha.
Yeah, one of the things I want to speak to, and it comes from the comment about the concentration camps, where it kind of started to spark this stream of thought. If we look at the concentration camps as, you know, we look at one of the methods used to kill people, they kill them by gas, right? So, and that happened in a relatively short amount of time. A lot of people lost their life that way. Now we take how the island and our islands and our world's being polluted and how poison's being applied to the environment. But it's being applied in a different time scale. You have to look at this across a period of time. If you look at how we're poisoning our environment, and you were to change the time scale from 50, 20, 10, 5, 1, you bring that time scale into a few days, the dosage of that poison is lethal. It would kill anything mm-hmm. in the environment. So what I see happening here is a very slow disintegration of value and preservation of the environment the only thing I can see is for profit, for greed, for money, and for the values that propagates. So it's important to take a step back and look at how our impacts accumulate over time and what that would feel like if it happened in a shorter amount of time.
But when every one of us, say, for example, uses a cell phone, you know, especially I've been resisting getting a 4G or 6G cell phone, and it's getting harder and harder to do it because my phone is falling apart. But those cell towers do a whole lot of damage. So, like, for the person who might have had their feelings hurt with that comment,
right.
You know, if I'm speaking for that person, I want to throw it back in everybody's face
right.
who uses these phones.
Right,
or
absolutely.
Or who... We don't all have in here, but most of us are giving a shout out to Macintosh, who exploit their workers in China, and, you know, boys in the Congo are dying getting the stuff for this. We are all a part of the problem.
Right.
Marshall, is there a caller with another question?
Yes, a caller had an interesting question. They wanted to know, is it possible that there could be put on the ballot some sort of referendum? I'm not sure what form it would take, whatever. Could we ban junk foods from the island of Kauai?
That
was
that.
The question.
I would say that no, you couldn't legally do that. But Gary, can you take that?
I would say the law is probably silent on that right now. I know New York City, you know, banned, many cities have banned trans fats and
really?
Big gulps, that kind of thing, local governments, yes.
Oh.
And the state of Hawaii constitution and state law is probably silent on that. And so it's possible that it would wind up in court. There's no question about that. But
yeah.
I know some smaller areas have banned food, certain, like, I want to call them big gulps is what it's called.
Yeah.
Supersizing.
Supersize.
Some have said you can't build fast food restaurants in certain towns and stuff like that. So I think it's...
It is true. I know some towns where they just don't allow fast food restaurants.
Right. The devil is always in the details, too, is what is junk food?
Yes.
Right.
You know, I mean, we have to, you know, but yeah. We all think we know what it is, but once you start with a definition,
right.
It's
right.
A little more difficult.
Right, it's a big thing. Okay, we have another caller, and then we're going to hear the county council report. Aloha, you are on the air. If your radio is on, please turn it off.
No, I'm in my car.
Okay.
I initially called about maybe about a half an hour, 45 minutes ago, about the comment about a previous caller comparing the GMO stuff to concentration camps.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for sharing.
When it got back up, it just got brought back up again about 10 minutes or 5 minutes ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the comparison, 6 million people died.
12 million died.
Okay, 6 million, yeah.
Six million Jews, 12 million people.
Yeah, and that comparison, and, you know, I understand the passion that your guests have over there, too, but the comparison between that, too, is really hard for me to take, because I have families that died in that time, and it's really, really tough for me.
Well, I apologize for hurting your feelings, and I'm looking at nodding heads. I think nobody means to hurt anybody's feelings.
Right, absolutely. In my comment, there's no comparison when you look at how much life was lost.
Or how intentionally it was taken. And how intentionally and cruelly it was taken.
Yeah, and the other thing that I have is, Mr. Hooser, as an elected official, to defend that comment, not defend it literally, but to defer it and put it off in some other manner that he did a half an hour ago, and then compare it is offending also as an elected official.
Yeah, I'd be happy to respond. When I heard the comment, I did not hear Holocaust. I heard concentration camps like internment camps, and so I was not at all comparing it to the Holocaust. I mean that is something. But I'm just saying. Let me finish. And so I again apologize if you were offended by it, but I was not comparing what's going on here with the Holocaust. I just, for what it's worth, that's it. Thank you.
Well, I mean, concentration camps and Holocaust are the same thing.
Well, they're. Part, I mean, it's not all the same thing, but they are similar, yes. I mean, there were concentration camps in the Holocaust. There are concentration camps in other environments, too, but we are sorry for hurting you.
No, I don't take offense to that personally. I mean, I do, it hurts me, but it's offensive to, I think, where a lot of people that have lost family members and stuff, and to compare it to is should be treated very lightly and not, yeah.
Okay,
so
and I
appreciate for your time.
Okay, and I appreciate your calling in, and when Marshall had made the comment, I was thinking that it probably was somebody who worked in the industry. So it's a very different, and so I was thinking, oh, okay, because that, you know, somebody's out there working hard every day, you know, doing whatever piece that they do. For them as individuals, they, I'm sure, are doing their very best to grow a good crop. And if they had the awareness that those of us feel in this room we have, I doubt they would be doing it. Because I've gone out to the fields, and they do a conscious job, and they do believe in what they're doing, and they personally are not afraid of the chemicals. So thank you, caller.
Yeah, I have, and one more thing, Felicia. I have, I listen to you guys' show. Every Tuesday and Thursday, I turn
Thank
in.
You.
I have no connection to any type of agrochemical industry whatsoever. As a farmer and a rancher, everybody has different means on how they do weed control and pest control and any kind of control whatsoever. And I understand where you guys are coming from. I don't like to use any more than I have to either. But, you know, sometimes it's necessary, and I didn't mean and want to make a big scene, but it kind of struck a nerve a little bit. I've never called before, but I figured today was going to be the day.
Thank you for calling in, and for others, it's 826-7771. Thank you so much.
Thank you much, brother.
You are listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. This is Kauai Soapbox. I'm Felicia. Marshall's answering phones. We've got Ray Mata, Gary Hooser, Stephanie Seneff in here. We're going to take one more call, then I want to hear the county council report. Aloha. Thank you for holding. You're on the air.
Aloha.
Aloha.
Is there any way that when we have a vote on the island, is there any way that the people of the island could vote strictly organic and remove all junk food from the island and have it not be able to come here because we, the people, have voted it into our laws or whatever? Is that possible?
I actually asked the question already.
Yeah, so thank you. And, you know, we answered that one, and there is... I'm learning that you can...
Yeah, I mean, theoretically, it might be possible to put that on the ballot and pass it into law, but it would be immediately challenged in court and be tied up for years and years. Other communities have done it on a small scale in other places, maybe have banned trans fats or banned certain types of beverages, sugar beverages, but just to require organic would be a big stretch.
And you know, I'll just throw in there, I would vote against that. I don't want somebody telling me what I have to eat. I don't want to tell somebody else what they have to eat. They can eat junk if they want to. I just want them to be aware that they're eating junk. And I will own it. Occasionally, I eat junk. I consider myself an opportunivore who tries to eat as best that I can. I just want to say, and we're going to go to the county council report in a moment here, but the ACLU, I don't know if you guys have seen this, Gary, Stephanie, but they've done a really great article this week. Their magazine this month is called Stand, and it's about extreme policing. And one of the articles in it is called Bad Laws and Bad Enforcement. I wanted to post it. It doesn't seem like it's available online yet. But I was really encouraged. I think it's, you know, very late for the ACLU to start looking at this, but they've done an excellent job. And I think that as we start to move forward as a county and a place and as awareness comes, we can help our police officers. We can help our communities by looking at these laws that have been put in place that really actually hurt everybody. And I think I want to applaud the county for getting the body cams. I think that's better for the protection of the officers as well as the people. It makes both sides of a conflict behave a little bit more strongly. And I'm just bringing that up relative to all of this dialogue because as far as our food supply goes, we have bad laws that create bad food practices. So if we start to change the laws by awareness, or even as we start to become aware and change our habits. I can tell Marshall has something that somebody had to say, and he's all jonesing over here to share it. What is up? I watch him start struggling. Okay. What did somebody say?
You know, I just really take very seriously my responsibility to pass the thoughts and
it's great.
That's
why you're
callers.
Doing it.
Yes. So that was the caller who originally mentioned concentration camps. And he essentially wanted to say, you know, that what that comment wasn't crucial to the point he was making, and let's just take that out of it.
But okay, he's sorry too.
Right.
Okay.
I think we can let the whole thing lie now.
Okay. And that's good. Okay, thank you. I want to play the county council report. Because at the end of the show, I'm going to do the promo for Aloha Aina. I usually end the show with the county council report, but we follow Gary, council member, very closely what the council does. So every show, I give the county council report. So here it is.
Aloha. I'm John Gordon for KKCR News. Here's a county council report for the week of July 21st. There will be a special council meeting at 8:30 a.m. on Wednesday. purpose is to interview James Jasper for at-large candidate for the Public Access Open Space Natural Resources Preservation Fund Commission with a term ending 12/31/2017. This meeting will be followed by a council committee meeting, and both meetings will be in the council chambers in Lihue. Here are highlights from the committee meeting agenda. The Planning Committee has a request from the Director of Planning for agenda time to brief the committee on the status of the general plan update. Committee Chair Chalk requests the Director of Planning, the Deputy Director of Planning, and the Director of Economic Development provide a briefing and an update on proposed agritourism legislation that the administration is developing. The Committee of the Whole has a request from Council Chair Raposo for the Managing Director in the Office of the County Auditor to discuss the audit of fuel costs, consumption, and management. This is Report 12-01, prepared by the Office of the County Auditor in April 2012, and to respond to the various findings and recommendations cited in the aforementioned audit. Also on their agenda is Bill 2590 for an ordinance to amend Chapter 22 of the Kauai County Code by repealing Article 25 relating to barking dogs. Public hearing was held on this on July 15, 2015. For more information, visit the county's website at www.kauai.gov. Until next week, I'm John Gordon for KKCR News. Aloha.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. This is Felicia with Kauai Soapbox. In the room with me, I have Councilmember Gary Hooser. So we were just talking about what you guys are doing tomorrow, and Dr. Stephanie Seneff and Ray Matas.
Just tomorrow, the probably the most important topic is going to be the general plan discussion, and not just for tomorrow, but long term. So I encourage people to follow the general plan update and to get involved and show up at those meetings, because at the end of the day, when the planning department comes with the general plan, they will say this is what the community wants. And so the community needs to engage that process.
Yeah. A couple weeks ago, we had Marie Williams in here from the planning department and really talking about how important it is for people to speak forward. And a lot of the people who do show are people who have enough comfort in their lives that they're able to attend these meetings. Not 100%, but mostly they're hearing from people who are stable, and, you know, that we need to have people speaking up also that are struggling. So, Stephanie, I had just mentioned a little bit ago about synergizing the Hawaiian empowerment movement and the environmental movement, and you had made a comment a little bit about that even the science community struggles a little bit. Yeah.
Yes, well, of course, we have a very small science community concerned with glyphosate, for example. There's a small group of people, all of whom are very, very worried about glyphosate, and each of whom has expertise to bring to the table. And people have differences of opinion. Sometimes there's just differences at the scientific level about whether this is the right way to go, whether this is the right science to do, whether this is even valid, you know, if you're using sort of the computer techniques versus sort of a real experiment. Does it, you know, does the computer modeling, is that okay or not? And, you know, people can just have these differences and discuss them, and that would be fine. But often what happens is you start to get emotions involved, egos involved, conflicts arise, and, you know, and we're such a small community, we can't afford that kind of thing. We need to all be on the same page. And it's not that we can't disagree about the science, but it seems there's a human nature to not be able to do that just rationally, you know, and you end up with factions and then accusations and all this kind of stuff that is basically what humans are about. You know, the emotional side of things gets in the way, I think, of uniting. And I think that can, it's similar to what's going on where you have the vegans and you have people who are going out and hunting. I mean, they just have different philosophies at some core level that then causes them not to want to work together. And if we could get over those differences, we could say, yes, we have those differences. We know we have those differences, but we all have a common enemy and we need to unite and work together to solve this problem.
And the common enemy might be health crises, or it might be maybe even at some level at its core a capitalistic system that is overshooting what, you know, should be the goal. You know, it shouldn't, not
right.
Everything should be about the bottom line economically. At some point, it's not about the money. It's about the health, the well-being, right, and the family. And so, Ray, you have spent – have you been to Mauna Kea three times or two times now?
I've been there three times.
Three times. That's what, yeah, I thought. And you've been camping up at the mountain with them, yes?
I haven't. There's one night that I stayed, okay, there, the night of the 23rd that went into the 24th, and we made our stand on that day. So I stayed up that night with them.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay, because we might have a listener who had asked me a question. What I could tell from the methodology to try and keep the enforcement people back was actually really very bright, where people were in series of lines,
right,
and then they would kept moving, but as they would move back, they would kind of circle around and come in front, and
exactly,
you know, it seemed like a really, you know, really strong strategy. Can you give us your impression of that day? Can you give us an impression of what's happening? Doesn't seem like they've started to come back at the people yet, since the Board of Land and Natural Resources,
right,
made this, to me, egregious set of rules.
Definitely. And just a side note, I just saw a picture of it. They just put the sign up today, up there on the Summit Road.
Who's they?
The BLNR.
And it says what?
I can read it to you if you like.
Yeah, let me read it to me. So, I can probably find it online, too. So they put up a sign today, and is it basically saying that they're going to start to build?
No, here's what it says. It says, restricted area, Mauna Kea Observatory Access Road and 1 mile on either side of road, closed 10 p.m. to 4 a.m., except to vehicles moving on the road. Prohibited at all times, sleeping bags, camping stoves, tents, and propane burners.
Hmm.
That's what the sign reads. Violators will be prosecuted. So they're making a very public statement. And they're putting that sign up there to let everybody know that this is an emergency rule. It's been enacted. It's now in full force. And so that's the news for today. That's one of the news for today.
And the Star Advertiser had a poll saying, should the governor use the National Guard? And I was happy to see that, at least last time I looked at it before I came in here, the dominant response was, no, don't do that.
Right. I've followed every single poll that the Star Advertiser has done with respect to this movement. And in every single case, in a lot of cases, overwhelmingly in support of the protectors and of the movement and of opposition to the construction of the telescope up there. So, you know, we're talking about a poll that's being done by that organization. And in every case, there's always been overwhelming support for the protection and for the opposition to the construction of the telescope.
And, Gary, you haven't gotten really very involved in this issue. Do you have a response on that? I mean, I know I think it's people identify with the human spirit actually standing and speaking truth to power. That's my perspective.
You know, I've been up on the mountain once since this started, and just went up there to witness and say hello and just to feel it myself. There was no great action going on at that particular time, but I just felt compelled to go up there. And, you know, I'm drawn to the passion in the people who are taking responsibility for the protection of their community. I think that at the end of the day, that's it.
Yeah.
And the people in charge of the rules are the people, again, with the money. And they're the ones that make the rules. They're the ones that interpret the rules. And it's a complicated issue. I think there's already been some wins in some small ways. There's been, I believe, at least two telescopes are going to be decommissioned.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's steps in the right direction. And I think there'll be additional victories for the people along the way. And I just commend all the people who are stepping up with this effort.
Yes. I, you know, feel strongly the same way. Ray, do you have any, you know, final thoughts on it, or another piece of synopsis?
You know, my experience that day on the 24th, I experienced a level of unity, of organization, of clarity, of vision, of connection with protecting something on multiple levels. We have the desecration of a spiritual realm, a place of worship, place of prayer. We have a mountain that, when you look at the creation story, the Hawaiian creation story, the Kumulipo, the Mauna Wakea is actually a family member. It lives within the genealogy of the people. So the people who are taking responsibility and exercising their kuleana, this mountain is like an auntie, a grandpa, or another person in their family that they would protect if something like this was happening to them. So you have that kind of person. And then, you know, I've also heard Lana Kila, one of the leaders of the organization, say that this is not just a Hawaiian issue, this is a human issue. And, you know, I asked myself, you know, how does that extend? In what way is this a human issue? And that's what we've been talking about for the last hour. You know, what are we protecting exactly? What is so special about this mountain? One of the things I learned about it, in terms of the water that comes off of the mountain, I didn't know this, but the deepest well in the world is 4,000 feet deep. It is off the slopes of Mauna Kea.
Wow.
So that's just one environmental resource, you know, that we're protecting. And, you know, I think it's something else that I learned. And for me, this has really been an exercise in awareness. You know, when I came to the island in 2001, I actually worked up on Mauna Kea. You know, I was drawn to the mountain. I was drawn to astronomy. I worked in Subaru Telescope.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to know intimately that process. And in the end, for me, I was drawn more to a place that really felt like it's a spiritual realm. It's a place that listens to prayer. It's a place that used to be respected and held in that way. So when I first started hearing the word akua getting thrown around, in my first impression, akua sounded like God, you know, the God that I grew up with in my Christian religion. But as I listened more and allowed myself to be educated, akua took on a different meaning. Akua is the spine. So akua is that spirit, that energy that actually supports and gives life. So when you have an akua like Poliahu, she's the akua of the snow, or Lili Noi, the akua of the mist.
Both of which are present at Mauna Kea.
Yeah, and in fact, this last Friday, we had a midsummer snow.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know this, but so that's Friday. The 2 days before that Friday, there was collective prayer happening around the whole Polynesian Triangle. You know, so that just gave me chills.
Mm-hmm.
That was definitely the last time that there was snow on Mauna Kea in July. Mm-hmm. Was July 1st, 1990.
Wow.
So that's 25 years ago.
Yeah,
so that's how rare. And, you know, on the spiritual water, I am less good at remembering all the names of the places. There is, like, the waters of Kane are up there, and there's two different places. There's a little lake up there. And then what we've learned in these BLNR meetings, that's when I learned it anyway, and since the protectors have been up there and really focused, is the waters of Kane have been repurposed, and they're being used to flush toilets at the Pahakuloa comfort station that was just put in there. You know, so it's that lack of connection to what the cultural meaning is, and then they're draining that lake. Right? And then when these telescopes are up there, they're pulling the water from right around there, and they're also doing like a French drain. And there's a 5,000-gallon hazardous waste container that's going in underneath this. And so what we've seen with Red Hill on Oahu, when we've learned that, you know, over 2 million gallons of fuel have spilled into that whole aquifer that feeds 25% of Oahu, you know, and all the way along this, they're like, trust us, trust us, trust us, and these changes come in. I want to say Jazz with John is coming up. He's in here, and it looks like Gary has something to say, and we have two callers holding.
Yeah, just real quickly, you know, I mentioned that the two telescopes being decommissioned is some wins. I think the far greater win is just the people, the movement that's been formed, and the lives that have been changed. I think that's really, really what's it about. These other two that I mentioned, I think history will say they're insignificant compared to just the personal wins of the lives that are up there on the mountain.
And I hope that win continues. I've heard people give really thoughtful things, saying they can take those two telescopes down and they could make a really cool cultural center, but I think they're missing the point. That it's like all these new songs are being written, these new chants. It's an amazing revitalization of culture, and people are speaking Hawaiian to each other in practice up there. None of this is a performance. This hula, everything, it is coming from the heart.
Yeah.
And it's coming from the heart because it's a purpose. It's not so they can have a cultural center to just practice what was in the past. This is alive and today.
Right.
Callers that are holding, thank you. I'm going to take the two of you, and then that's going to be it. Aloha, you are on the air.
Hi, and thanks for the forum. You've had a great show. Thank you, Felicia. And I would like to thank Mr. Hooser for having the courage it takes to call a spade a spade. These GMO criminals are poisoning humanity. They are poisoning the livestock herd. It's very obvious that the reproductive health of all these animals being fed these modified crops, their reproductive health is failing. So what does that do for the rest of us that are down the food stream from there? You know, it's just, and like I say, I'd like to thank Mr. Hooser, because I think his outspokenness has made him somewhat of a target in local politics, that he is some kind of troublemaker, when in fact, the trouble is coming from the bureaucrats that allow this level of criminality. And again, Mr. Hooser put his finger right on it when he was describing the efforts at corporate control of humanity. And believe me, there is a concerted effort historically in that vein. And if you'd like a little taste of it on a level you might relate to, go find John Kennedy's Secret Society speech, where he orates to the Washington Post Press Club all about the powers that are aligned against our nation and our health and our future as a race. So anyway, thanks again. And go look for the network of global corporate control if you want to get a little better educated on what is going wrong. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. We have another caller. Aloha, thank you for holding. You're on the air.
Hey, can you guys hear me?
I can.
Okay. Thank you for bringing up, you're raising the point between alliances between the environmental protection movement and the Kanaka Maoli movement. But also, I think that's already happening to some degree, but there has to be some unity and some discussion, at least some discussion at this point, between labor and the Hawaiian movement, you know. And if we can have some unity, because we're basically facing the same enemy, the 99% of us, the working people and the vast majority of the community, versus the 1% of capitalists whose sole concern is to make money, you know, and government officials like EA that protect them. I'm really concerned about possibilities of alliances with labor and the Hawaiian movement. As you can see through Local 5, the Hotel Workers Union, they came out against the PLDC, you know, and also their community arm, which is the IKEA movement, has come out in support of the Mauna Kea struggle. And what's happening in September, Labor Fest, which I work with, which is an educational group, this is going to be our fourth year, we're going to be having a panel on the possibility of alliances between labor and the Hawaiian movement. So far, we've got two commitments. We have Eric Gill from Local 5, who's done the best job so far of aligning itself with Hawaiians in the community and the environmental movement. They came out strongly in the support of 2491. And I got a commitment right now from Andre Perez, who's one of the organizers from Oahu that's been up to Mauna Kea. So hopefully we'll be talking about these kinds of things, because we have to, in order for us to succeed and fight these guys that we all face, we're going to have to get some unity. And hopefully down the road we can have labor come out in support of these kind of movements like Palakia and encourage the workers not to participate and build these monstrosities that we don't need. I contacted the AFL-CIO and talked with Randy Pereira, and who's the president of the American Federation of Labor, Congress of Industrial Organizations, which is the biggest labor federation in the Hawaiian Islands. And I asked him, because I wrote a letter that got into the paper about how the labor movement should support the Hawaiian movement. And he told me not a chance that it would happen, because the labor federation, almost half of its members are construction worker unions. Yeah, so those are some of the things that we're going to have to deal with. But I remember when James Alalem and I were trying to stop the bike path over in Wailua Beach, there were several times that we were able to talk to the workers, and they laid down their tools and they refused to work. Three times, in fact. So it's a possibility stuff like this can happen.
Yes, and thank you so much for that. Yeah. And I appreciate your efforts for the $15 an hour minimum wage.
Yeah, well, my concern is kind of like organizing, workers to not only fight for the daily needs that we have, you know, like living wages and stuff, but also to support environmental concerns.
Yeah.
What's happening on the U.S. continent, is that it's already beginning to happen. Indigenous organizations, labor, and environmental groups have united around the XL pipeline.
That's right. Ray, I would love to have you take an afternoon off and come in and really do a full show with me on these things.
Yeah, well, you know, one day
and
I
it's
can.
And it's at the end of the hour here, and I have to give everybody...
I know, but I'm glad you gave me that turn to talk. And Gary knows how I feel, because I talk with him about this stuff all the time. So, anyways, thank you for a good show, and I'll try to check out that movie Aina when it comes out here in Puhi.
Okay, and I'm gonna play that in just a moment. Thank you so much. Mahalo.
Okay, bye-bye.
So all kinds of good things going on. Even though the show deals with a lot of bummer issues, I feel really encouraged. I feel like because of people like all of you that are in here, we are making a difference. The world is getting better, and everybody's working together. So I'm going to give you each a chance to just say a very quick aloha, and we're going to end with the trailer for the Aloha Aina movie, and then we're going to have jazz with John. Dr. Stephanie Seneff.
Aloha.
Okay. So next week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Waimea, Princeville, Lihue.
Just thank you, Felicia and KKCR, for the great community service you all are doing. Thank you very much.
No worries. And the TPP event on Maui, people are getting together on July 29th?
29th is the focal point. It goes through the 31st, I believe, but the 29th, there are people be gathering on Maui. So people looking to get involved and send a message, Maui needs the help.
Okay, and BLNR, turn off the water in those hotels. No plumbing. Okay, right?
Yeah, and turn the water back up there at Halepohaku.
I just
want to say aloha and thank you so much to the community and KKCR and Felicia for inviting us, and just, you know, for all of us who are making that difference in our own lives. Mahalo.
And Marshall, thank you always for doing such a good job with the folks on the phone.
We had some really passionate folks today, and it's great to hear that people are excited and alive and thinking.
That's right. Okay, so Kauai Soapbox signing out with this promo for Aloha Aina, and I've got John Gordon behind me, so if I have trouble playing this, he's going to help me. John, it's not coming up. Uh-oh. Hang on, I'm going to do it again. Okay. Okay, hang on. Let me try again. It's so great. You know, this is community radio, and we all are just learning and volunteers, and we work together.
We shouldn't be hearing it.
All right. Darn it.
Is it?
No. Here.
Yeah, could you try the other one?
Okay, maybe I can't do it. Darn it.
It looks great, though.
I can see it over
your shoulder there. It looks like a really fantastic film.
Okay.
I could kind of hear it a little bit,
we're
too.
We're kind of hearing it. We're seeing it, yeah.
Highly recommend, just from the visuals.
Yeah, I do a talk show. He's got the sound going. So, it's really good.
No, you can tell just by glancing. It's going to be an amazing film.
Yeah. Okay, all right, so Coming up next is Jazz with John, and this program is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with Kauai Coffee, Kamoa Ukulele, and Tiki Aniki.
Kauai Coffee, 100% pure Hawaiian, single-origin, GMO-free coffee. Grown and roasted here on the Garden Island, at retail locations island-wide on all the Hawaiian islands, and at our estate on Highway 540 between Kalaheo and Ali'ali, where walking tours and coffee tasting are also available. More information and ordering online at kauaicoffee.com.
Kamoa Ukulele Company, dedicated to building high-quality bell-tone instruments. Built with a one-player-at-a-time philosophy, from student models up to custom masterpieces. Kamoa Ukulele Company, a family-owned business, supports KKCR. 652-9999 or online at kamoaukulelecompany.com.
Announcing Saturday and Sunday brunch at Tiki Aniki, 8:30 to 2:30. Lunch, dinner, late night, and now brunch at Tiki Aniki in the Princeville Center. Fine dining in a wild setting. 431-4242.
And a big mahalo for supporting community radio, KKCR Honolulu, KAQA Kilauea. And here's Jazz with John coming up. Got a very interesting, another eclectic jazz show for you tonight. So stay in there.